I swear I didn't touch anything.
There we go.
I don't know, that moment. It's that moment. It just blacks out for a second, and then when it comes to life again, the screen is all pixelated, and I'm like, it's like entering a new realm, right? The decoded realm, where you see the ones and the zeros coming down the screen.
I was thinking of that. I was thinking, like, yeah, the whole Matrix. Like, what's that called? Like a transition graphic when we go from just you and I talking on the on-ramp to now we're potentially talking to everybody, boys. We're now in recording mode. You've entered the Matrix. I don't know. Maybe we've left the Matrix. I don't know which one it would be.
No, I think when we hit record, everybody knows what we're up to. No, we're out of the Matrix. Like, I mean, okay, so it depends on how you want to look at it.
Yeah.
In the Matrix or out of the Matrix, which one is safer? Which one is where we can be our true selves and the government and Big Brother and everybody else has no idea what we're doing? I think it's before we hit record. And isn't the Matrix the Matrix? Yeah, I'm confused now. You tell me, Chris. Right now, I believe like we are, like we've turned the cameras on for everybody to see.
Right.
Nobody needs to spy on us because we're letting them. We've just opened the doors. We're like, come on in. We're chatting.
Technically, I guess you and I now are our virtual versions of us, of ourselves. So if we take that just as the, you know, one of the criteria for, I don't know, being in the Matrix, on the Matrix, we're virtual versions of us. We are no longer the real, we are 1 degree away from being our authentic selves.
100%.
I don't know. When I look at some of the rules of the Matrix, like the thing I look at power. Who or what holds the power? And if, again, we've just said to Skype, thanks, Skype, we can talk now. We're now given up. We're now using surveillance tools to have an EDU/dadhood/friendship conversation. So we're using a Skynet-esque tool to have our very earnest and rational discussion around EDU.
/dadhood/friendship. I like that.
Yeah.
And the way you were, for anybody not watching the video, Chris is slashing with that hand.
I'm doing the hand slashes.
I should be doing it because I'm the one that looks more like a lumberjack, but it's all good.
So the Matrix, yeah, I don't know. I guess I look at it as you and I only entirely escape the Matrix when we're sitting in that divey Pepe's Pizza having a sub. There's no smart TV on the wall. It's like one of those old box TVs playing some news channel that I don't even know. You know, it doesn't have the ticker tape. And we got the sub in front of us and we just say, what now? There we go. We're in our best analog selves in front of that toasty sandwich.
What I'd like to say to that is, in one way, Pepe's is probably the best place to sit and talk and nobody's surveilling you. But on the other hand, shady things have been known to go down around Pepe's. So maybe it is the wrong place to be. Yeah, that's funny. That's funny. Maybe we're in the wrong place. Maybe we need to find a new place. But definitely, I'm sure I hear what you're saying. The doors are wide open here. You know, we've allowed whoever wants to check in. And it's kind of fun, right? Because sometimes people talk back. Sometimes mm-hmm. people say, hey, this is what I heard you say. Can we talk a little bit more about that? Or I really like this. Or can you guys do some of this or whatever? So that's cool. That's cool. We don't have a lot of time today, but
mm-hmm.
I notice you're wearing your red for Ed toque mm-hmm. that says OSSTF on it.
Yep.
And I think in our last podcast episode, we talked a little bit about maybe entering into the politics of EDU in Ontario. I don't know if you want to go there, But I'm willing to shoot from the hip for a little bit because I feel like things are going down. I feel like my father-in-law and I, when we talk EDU politics, he'll tell me about the last time there was a strike and he was out picketing, and he tells me about it. And he remembers it vividly because certain things happened that ingrained certain memories into his mind for the rest of his life. And I feel like we're on the brink of people like you and I entering into an experience that will be in, like, just burnt into the back of our minds, and we'll be telling these stories to our kids in the future, you know, when this comes up or when they decide they want to be teachers or whatever, right? So what's your take so far on how things are going?
I'm gonna shift. I want to pivot sideways to answer the question, because, and I'm taking this slightly from inspiration from the video that you posted talking about your TPA. Mm-hmm. And you got me thinking about some of the things that just, and you know, I have played with this before, that element of where you and I think every once in a while we're kind of bubbling up stuff that goes on in our daily lives that isn't normally kind of brought to the forefront. And I think that kind of comes up naturally from you and I talking about our practice in schools, our relationships in schools, the kind of cross-pollination or not cross-pollination between home life and school life. And all what I'm going to say as far as how things are going so far, specifically in response to your answer, anyone that picks up our feed and happens to listen to this episode, I think that the best thing that they could do is just watch the news, as many different channels as you can, follow socials, so check out different hashtags about what's going on, and talk to different people, both people inside EDU and outside EDU, only because from what I've observed, it's a particularly interesting bit of momentum that's happening right now, where I don't see a lot of people, and I haven't heard a lot of people openly supporting the government. I'm not coming across it. Now, again, I'm in protected spaces. A whole lot of people that I work with, we're all on the same page. But even when we step slightly outside of that page and we talk to someone, you know, when I'm shopping at No Frills, or the parents that are stopping by as we're having our information pickets, we're not being called out for misstep here. You know, are the teacher unions and the individuals that are stepping up and saying the government changes are wrong. Like, there's no one, I haven't come across someone that specifically said to me, this is entirely wrong. You could argue the cost of living increase is like too much and say, but there's specific dollar values there, but everything else is in the interest of maintaining the needs in the schools. So in response to how things are going, that's kind of like my front end rant. What I want to add in, which is sort of an interesting perspective for someone that's picking up our feed, is that I volunteered to be strike captain. So at my school, I'm vice president for our local branch, so at the school. And there's was the ask as we were coming into this through the branch president as to whether anyone would like to take on the role of strike captain. Now, I've been involved with the union before in other positions. I have not held this position before. And it's obviously connected with our current state of negotiations. And that's a really, it's becoming more and more fascinating role to play. And the information as it flows to me and through the branch president is so far because things are, it's sort of in time delivery. There's a whole lot of literature to sort of read, procedural reading, and as far as sort of frequently asked questions kind of reading. And then the third layer to this is the interaction with our members. So the individuals at the school and coordinating the information pickets this past week, that scheduling was a part of my portfolio. Sort of having the follow-up conversations between the schedule shifting and where around the school and like how we're going to be placed in our information pick. So some of that strategy falls to me to figure out. And it's something that, you know, isn't being, I haven't seen conversations openly popping up about it, but it's really, it's cool to be able to assist in the on the ground stuff that's happening with the strike action so far. Because in a lot of ways you're getting some of the feeds that I've seen, they're the, yes, such and such a school is out today. Fantastic. You're getting the thumbs up. There's sort of the teachers supporting the OSSTF initiatives. But I'll say from the inside, there's a different feel, right? Like sort of when you get beyond the kind of posing for, you know, the photos and kind of saying we have solidarity, we're together. You know, you're standing out there on the streets and you have a whole lot of emotions that you're running through. There's a whole lot of conversations about kind of what everyone wants to talk about. What's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? There's the individuals that are throwing in institutional memory, as in, well, I remember back in 97, or I remember Raid. Like, they're throwing in that sort of stuff. Like, it's really vibrant. It's a vibrant, one of the most vibrant discussion places to be right now when we're out there doing the information pickets and the amount of information that's kind of being bouncing back and forth and still trying to maintain, okay, we're out here with a purpose, still try to connect with the people that are sort of driving by. Like, it's really, really dynamic. And moving forward, there's still discussions that we have to have about what will be happening next, aka next Wednesday. So there's going to be more information coming to me about how we sort of move through the that stage of this process.
Thanks for sharing.
Yeah. And part of it is I'm no politico. I don't have the training to be able to kind of use the euphemisms and some of the guarded language that others are far better at. Others, you know, completely misuse it and just say garbage. So I'm aware that I'm hyper aware right now. And especially because, you know, are we in the matrix? Are we not in the matrix? Do we have control? Do we not have control? This type of a discussion is, there will be people that, you know, if they listen to this feed, they're like, oh, is there going to be a reveal here? Is there going to be a strategy? You know what I mean? That's sort of like the wondering, okay, he has some sort of like inside track because he is a strike captain. Like, what can we find out on the inside? So I'm a little guarded, but I did want to mention that because it is one of those spaces that I'll say in an Ontario context. No, you know what? I've never come across any feeds that talk about specifically the coordination of strike action. Like, I haven't come across that. I've gotten the feeds from different jurisdictions. Most recently, I think in Chicago, talking about what it means to sort of be out on strike. But not a lot of sort of like what's the kind of human side to that? Like, how does it feel on the inside? What's kind of happening there? Like, what's just behind the photo? And what I love is that I've seen a lot of the, mostly Twitter, that's kind of where I play. I see the photos pop up of the individuals holding the no cuts to education. I am a public education worker, so those signs as well. And I see that and I'm completely appreciative of that. And at the exact same time, my brain flips to be a part of that group. And I know of the social element and the stress and the anxiety and the hope and the solidarity and the relationships that are being built. As sometimes there's some individuals in my school. My school has 100 teachers. There are some that this particular time, this is one of the first times that I've had an extended amount of moments to have a solid conversation with these people and getting to know them out there. So there's some real valuable social relations happening as we're getting out there together and supporting each other. So a little bit of the insider, a little bit of the flipping the matrix a little bit, I guess.
It's interesting. Like I'm playing on Twitter too, and people like Muna Kadri are like
props Muna. Live
tweeting. You know, I get to her tweet and there's video attached of what's going on outside of the school where she's at, and public reaction to them. And she's really, I believe she's doing a good job of keeping us informed, us, the people who are not out there, with the information pickets and things. So it's just, it's a different world, really. Like it's different. It's much more out there. And, you know, being an education worker as well, I really hope that at the end of all this, we get what it is we're looking for, which is to keep our education system as solid as it already is and to stop kind of systematically dismantling it. That's my hope. And I know that that's what, you know, the unions are aiming for. That's what we want. And as a parent, because we both, you and I, we're teachers, but we're also parents and our kids are in the system. I'm opposed 100% to what they're doing. You know, with a kid that's going into high school next year and understanding my son's needs and his strengths, forcing him to take, you know, two e-learning courses is not going to be good. It's not going to be good for my kid. Whereas, you know, for me, I would have loved it. So the option of having e-courses is great, but the option of forcing it down people's throats, well, that's a whole other issue. And that's just an example of something I'm opposed to as an educator and as a parent with a child in the public school system. That's kind of my take at the moment.
And you're also, it's, yeah, as you mentioning, like, that's, I love the mention of you recognizing you as a learner that would work as, and you're an accelerated learner. Like you have a depth of understanding in, with tech that I deeply appreciate that you're kind of calling that out, that despite that fact, or that notwithstanding, I guess, that your own kids are different. Like they're not, this isn't a cookie cutter that because, you know, you're good with it, that they're going to be good with it. And this is, I think, part of what's happening. That is a big part of what's happening with the decision with the e-learning, is that their observation of other jurisdictions where, not where it's working, but where it exists, that somehow that can just be that can be kind of templated and stamped and say, well, that's our new model of education for Ontario. So
I want to shift gears a little bit based on that, what you just said.
Sure.
Okay, so let me see if I can try to do this in a clear way. Last week, I was feeling really awesome about being a weirdo in education. Okay. And I don't remember, so many things have happened. There's so many lines of communication. I don't remember if I talked about it on the podcast about how, you know, it had come to light last week and kind of the week before that people who are innovating, people who are into the 21st century tech type stuff, we're just different right now. And a lot of people recognize that, and we're kind of empowering ourselves by acknowledging our differences and our weirdo factor. So I felt really good last week about that. This week, based on what you were saying about, like, you know, I'm into tech, but I'm also open to saying that this whole e-learning thing, it just doesn't work for some people. And some people love it, some people hate it. And so you got to recognize that and try to balance that out, I believe. So this week we're at the high school my son is going to go to had an open house for grade eights and their parents. And, you know, big props to Resurrection Secondary School. They did a wonderful job of putting this on. I felt like it was very, very well organized, very well run by the staff and the students. And then peripheral staff as well. Like all the principals from the feeder schools were there, which was awesome because my principals were there because my my school feeds into this high school. And so it was just, it was a great evening. And my son wanted to go and he was with his friends and he was pumped. So we're there and it's really cool because I know a lot of people there. I'm a teacher in the system. It's not a big system. And it's a close high school. I know people. And so as we're walking the halls, my son says to me, he's kind of joking with his friends, like, okay, my dad's already talked to like four people that I have no idea who they are, but they work here. And now I'm kind of on their radar. And so the joke is, let's see how many people he knows before we all leave. And we walk into one classroom and there's a gentleman who used to be a chaplain in our system. He's now a high school teacher. And right away, he's like, Roland, how you doing or whatever? And my kid comes over, we introduce him, and my son walks away. And this teacher says something to me that basically reaffirms some of the thoughts and feelings I've had at my new school and gives me a bit of a boost that I feel like I really needed this week because of my TPA and stuff like that. He says to me, I read your blog post about having moved schools and about the expectations that you felt were placed upon you to continue doing the things that you did at your last school at this new school in a vacuum. He goes, I appreciate that people just believe you're moving around doing a thing, right? Whatever that, there's a template for Roland Chidiac and this is how he operates at every school he goes to. And he said, I really want to thank you for your blog post about that is not the case, that you came to this new school and these expectations were that you continue doing certain things, but your response to that was, hold on, I don't know my students yet. This is a completely different experience than my last experience. And you people want me and expect me to do certain things without even me getting to know the people in front of me that I'm going to do this to. I was totally taken aback that this had come up. And he's like, no, I've been waiting to see you. And I wanted to tell you about this. This is amazing that you kind of stood up for yourself. And then it hit me over the head again that every situation that you go into is different. And sometimes people will put you into a situation because they believe that you have something to offer. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? Like I feel like I'm in my groove now at this new school. And I am doing certain things that I would do before, but it seems to fit. The kids are open to it. The kids are telling me, hey, we're interested in this, so let's do this. It's not me walking in and force feeding them stuff that they're not interested in. I'm not a fan of that. Even though, you know, you lose a part of yourself every time you go to a different community. And I was talking to somebody this week about how tired I am. And I think that's part of me being, that's part of the tired, is that I've lost pieces of me along the way. Pieces that were so integral to who I am as a teacher and a person and my identity. And then you walk into a new place and that you got to let go of that piece because it doesn't fit anymore. But you feel like you've lost part of yourself and your identity has to shift. And so that was kind of the thing that happened this week that really, it's a piece of me that will stay in me, right? Like it's a foundational piece that I now will carry with me everywhere I go and remember, hey, don't forget who you are. And don't forget that as you move and as you enter into new things, who you are shifts a little bit. And some of the things you relied on before, you can't rely on anymore. And that causes, for me, it causes some exhaustion. It causes some anxiety, but it's also exciting because it means, well, what will I morph into now? Like, what will come of this new person? Letting go of something means that there's space for something new to enter in for me and for, I believe, for anybody. So I wanted to put that out there because it kind of went along with what you were saying. And I believe in a way I'm kind of honoring myself because, and I try not to do that to other people now. I really try not to do that to other people now because it really is not fair. And it's really not acknowledging the person. I mean, some people do move and do different things, but stay the same. But you look at them and you're like, man, this doesn't fit. Why are you forcing something like this? Why are you doing this? It doesn't fit. It doesn't work. This isn't what people need or want at this time. And I'm not judging. I'm just saying, like, I see these situations and I'm like, how can this be?
I like the you dropped a moment there talking about your TPA, and it makes me think about how, in many ways, how rigid the TPA structure is. There's discussion that happens around there. There's a hard and soft element to the TPA, and the hard part are the deliverables, right? Like, you have to provide your planning and your communication logs. You have to sort of show lesson structure. You have to demonstrate how you're integrating board initiatives, board expectations, supporting the wellness of the kids, including equity, literacy, numeracy, whatever your modern learning sort of framework is. Could be discussions around leadership in the school. Like, there's a whole lot of hard pieces, physical pieces that have to be extremely transparent in that process. And then there's all the soft stuff, which I always think about how the density of the hard pieces in relation to the soft pieces. And I know we have the pre and post discussion with the TPA process. I know that there's interactivity probably outside of that a little bit, like just the sort of on the fly discussions around pedagogy and philosophy of education. Like, these things happen too. What you've brought to mind for me, though, is thinking about the, how is the, how is the spectrum of you developing, like the different versions of you as an educator, how is that woven into this process? You're coming at it talking about, you know, you do have a toolkit that is a kind of like your operating system. You're waiting to sort of activate any of the apps in it, depending on whoever's in front of you, which is absolutely on point. There could be an expectation from the outside that you are a certain type of teacher. So an assessor coming in to look at you may roll in and say, well, this is definitely going to be a technology boosted type of experience, regardless of what's on the page for the lesson or the structure that's in your planning. And it got me thinking about the space to be able to have that conversation around, yes, I am, and I have demonstrated a capacity of leadership or mastery in this area of teaching. But you know what? I think for this lesson, I'm going to take a risk. It just brings to question a really interesting kind of like push-pull tension that comes with our TPA process. Is it a time for our learning? Is it a time for teachers, educators, the ones being assessed, to sort of demonstrate risk? Are we able to kind of work that in to the discussion? And are the assessors able to kind of like give feedback towards that? It's a bit of a mind game we play with ourselves. Like, I remember my last TPA that I had. So at the time, my portfolio was, I was doing alternative education. So my one half of my life, well, I guess it's two-thirds of my life at that point, I had two sections of personalized alt ed. And within each of those classes, at the time, I had at least 10 kids in each class, and each kid was working on a different course. So I had that, and then my other half of the portfolio was teaching the hospitality class, so teaching the tech class. And I, you know, for listeners or people that are unfamiliar, for us, you're able to kind of pick at secondary what classroom you want your assessor to come into. Slightly different element maybe at elementary, where your classroom is more of an everything classroom than, let's say, at secondary. My alt ed probably was very close to an experience of what, let's say, an elementary classroom would be, because you have a lot of different things going on at one time. I chose the tech course to come in because I had been doing it, the teaching hospitality, for a while, and I wanted feedback that helped me see what I was doing in a different way. I wanted the person, and I felt like I could competently demonstrate what I needed to in either classroom. But at the time, I felt like I wanted feedback for the hospitality class. So again, somebody at the school that I was at, I was the alt ed guy and I was the hospitality guy. I was also the union guy, but those were the hats of expectation. And I thought that I needed to have a little bit of that idea of self. I needed to have a little bit of it chipped away in my identity to kind of figure out what I needed to do next to improve. But yeah, the mind games. But that's what you got me thinking about, like that idea of, you know, how capable is the system to sort of allow us to flow with who we have been, who we are, who we're going to be. And, you know, just that sensation of being held accountable to a version of you that you're kind of, I was craving, like, I wanted to change it up. Like, I didn't want to stay that person. Not for any bad reason, but I wanted to grow.
I hear you. And the first thing I think of for me is my perspective on where I work and who I work with. And so in my case, the lesson that was observed was not a high-tech lesson at all. Not at all.
That would be surprising to people. I think that would be surprising to people that...
It was not a high-tech lesson at all. In fact, I decided that I wanted to do a whole group class lesson. I wanted them to have some hands-on activities after the lesson. There was a creation of an anchor chart. There was reference to our other anchor charts to help us with our learning.
Classics.
The only use of technology was my overhead camera to explain the worksheet that went along with the hands-on activity. That was it. This was done purposely. I felt like I wanted my principal knows what I can do with technology. My principal knows about the esports. My principal knows about the Chromebooks and the HP laptops and the Minecraft. Like, he knows. So I wanted to say, hey, take a look at this. I can still build an anchor chart with my kids. I can still have them cutting out stuff and putting stuff together and walking the room. I don't need to just be on a computer monitoring their activity in real time. Like, that's what I wanted to do. And I did it. And he already knows the tech side of me. He knows that stuff. And he approves of it. That's why he let me in. That's why he brought me in. And I love that the tech toolbox and whatever you want to call that, the innovative mindset and the risk taking that's within me. I love that people love that about me, and I love being used for it. So even like, so in my situation, in my post observation, you know, as my principal said to me, okay, so tell me, like, just tell me, what are some of the things you're doing in the building? I want to write them down, and I want to kind of integrate more of who you are. And it was interesting because he was like, I'm not doing this to, like, I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I just don't know everything you do. And the first thing he wrote down was all around tech helper. And I was like, that's awesome that he knows that it's not a formal position in the school. It's not a formal extracurricular, but he knows and he acknowledges and appreciates that. You know, from day to day, somebody will walk into my room, grab me and say, you need to come help me. I don't know what's wrong with the computer, or I'm trying to do this online and it's not working. I don't get it. Can you please jump in and help me? Like, or somebody will literally come to the door with a Chromebook and say, oh, I'm really sorry. I know you're working with the kids. I just need you for a second. Like, I appreciate that he appreciates that this happens informally all the time, and he's recognizing it. He's like, this is part of what you do here. There's no way I'm not recognizing that. I know. And he's like, I help him with our YouTube video, our YouTube channel. Like, I help him directly with it. And he's like, holy cow, you give of your time at least one planning time every week to do this. So how can I not acknowledge this, right? How can I not acknowledge the risk taking, the leadership, all that stuff that gets rolled around one, just one thing that I do to help. And so for me, I did not need to go high tech. I did not need to go, you know, breaking innovative barriers. I didn't need to do any of that. And I felt comfortable in my experience. But having said all that, the reflection I posted yesterday about the anxiety that comes with it is very real. It's very real because, as you said, there is a hard side to this and a soft side to this. And my principal said something that was very, that one of the many reasons why I love this guy and that I'm willing to go through a wall for him is because he is real. It's because he is present. And so he said to me, one of the first things, so when, you know, he told me what time we were going to meet, and I said, do I need to bring anything? He said, no, just come, and we're going to have a really honest and good discussion about what I saw, and you're going to help me fill in the blanks. I'm like, okay, no problem. And he says, the first thing he says to me is, listen, the first thing is, you know, when I'm walking into a classroom of someone with your experience, you know, 17 years of experience, he goes, there's no major issue here. He goes, I know that. And he says, in his experience, walking into a veteran's classroom, there's not going to be any major issues. And he said, if there were, I would have spoken to you by now, which is something that in my that I expect from an administrator. I really am saddened and don't expect administrators to walk in and blow your world apart with a TPA when they could have told you a month ago that they really think it's important that you start, you know, following through with this initiative, or, you know, they kind of wink at you and say, I hope those number talks are going well. I'm not in your room to watch you do them every day, but this is the expectation. This is part of our school improvement plan. This is what helps students learn and become better mathematicians. Like, you know, for someone to walk into your class, observe a 40-minute or an hour lesson, and then leave and tell you you're unsuccessful, like, this blows my mind. Why hasn't there been a discussion previous to this that maybe there are things you're not doing that you should be doing? So the first thing he says to me is, I wasn't concerned, I'm not concerned because you're a veteran teacher. I see what you do every day. So that's the other thing too. He's like, I know this is your performance appraisal, but I've been in your room 100 times. I see how you treat your students outside on duty. I see how you treat your students in problematic situations. I hear you talk to me about your parent communication and your Twitter and your newsletters. Like, he's like, I know all this already. So I don't need you to bring me 8,000 pieces of evidence because I've seen it already. You do it. He goes, you know, what I didn't observe is this, this, and this. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? I said, of course. And it got to the point where I had to stop myself. I had to say, okay, I'm going to stop talking now. He'd laugh because he's like, okay, I know you do it, but I didn't see it in your room when I was there. And I haven't seen it in the past year and a half. So tell me about it. Like, one of them was, do you have a classroom management system? Because he goes, I know you're doing something right because you're not in the office every day with a kid complaining about something or dealing with something. So I'm like, yeah, sure, let me tell you about it. I tell him about it. He's like, yeah, I did see something like that in the room, but I wasn't sure what it was. That, to me, best case scenario. But it did not, but none of my anxiety was put aside. It was still a process where I knew that there are all these expectations that I need to meet or demonstrate that I'm trying to meet. And that's not going to go away. I can't ignore those and he can't ignore those. And that's where the pressure comes from, I think. And one of my colleagues said to me yesterday, you know, he, and this was part of my reflection, he was bothered that I was bothered in the first place. He's like, you're a veteran. You've been through this before and you still are taken aback by the process. And I said, yes. And I said, you will be too next year when you're on performance, because you don't know really, you just never really know, because they're observing you and judging you in a formal process, in a formal way. And, you know, I hammered at him a bit. And then by the end of the day, he did acknowledge. He said, yeah, I'm on TPA next year. Now you're making me nervous. And I said, oh, that's funny. You told me 2 hours ago you were surprised I was nervous. Now you're telling me I'm making you nervous, and you're a year away from it. But that's what it does. That's what it can do. I'm sorry, I haven't met a teacher yet who's been on performance appraisal that wasn't nervous. I haven't. And if you're out there and you're listening, let us know. I'd love to hear what you do, because there's a relief now, right? It's done. And my principal, they know how I operate. And if there's an issue, they'll talk to me about it. I'm pretty sure of that. And I will fix it, because I don't want issues. You know, I don't want to come to work and not do what is expected of me. I do want to do what I'm supposed to do. And if I'm not doing it a certain way, if they'll tell me, I will work on it. I will fix it. You know, near the end of the meeting, he said to me, okay, we need some goals for you to move forward. And, you know, I did the smile, and I put up my fist, and I'm like, I need to learn how to become a better math teacher. And, you know, he kind of chuckled, because he knows about my fear of math. But I said, listen, ever since coming here, I've had a really good experience. Like, my numeracy coach last year was awesome. My numeracy coach this year is awesome. I trust them. I'm learning from them. They're helping me. They've helped me push myself and take more risks with my numeracy instruction. And I feel like I can see the progress. For me, I've seen development. I've seen progress. I'm really happy with what I've learned from them and how I've kind of rolled it into the work we're doing, so much so that now I'm pushing back. Like, I'm saying, hey, does this count as a number talk? And then they politely bring me back down and say, no, Roland, at the very core, this is what it is. So whatever you do, this needs to be the foundation of what you're doing. And if it is, you're on the right track. If you're not, well, then you're not. And it's funny, because they'll never tell me I'm doing it wrong. They just say to me, well, here's the foundation. This is what you're trying to get at. So if what your idea is that's going to lead you to this foundation, great. If not, well, maybe you might want to rethink it. And so stuff like that, that like I'm able to push back and I'm able to take risks and feel good about it. But that was fun. That part was fun, talking about my goals moving forward. One of them has to do with leadership. And it was funny, because he kept looking for a way to integrate something that is important to the leadership process, but I've already done them. So he's like, okay, well, have you done this yet? Yeah. And he'd look at me like, are you kidding me? I'm like, no. Okay, well, then this might be your next step. No, I've already done that. And it was just funny that he's like, well, what am I supposed to write down? He goes, I guess the next step is for you to actually apply to a formal leadership position, because you have all the pieces. And I said, the piece that I don't have is actually sitting down talking to you about it and making that more of a formal thing. And he's like, that's awesome. Let's do it. And so at that point in the process, I was feeling really good about it. Was an open back and forth. Like, this is for you. This is for your growth, not for mine. But there are some things he needs to know. And, you know, I was telling Sarah, my wife, about it, and she's like, wow, it sounds like a job interview. Like, he'd flip to page 92 and say, okay, I didn't see this in your room. Can you please explain to me how you might do this or how this works? And she goes, that sounds really nerve-wracking. I said, it was actually fun. It was actually fun, because he could see my fluency with my professionalism, right? So it wasn't like, give me a minute, I don't know how to answer that question. It was, oh, you want to know about differentiated instruction and you didn't see any of it? That sucks. Let me tell you about what I do on a daily basis, and then just start explaining. And he knows, but he needs to hear it from me, right? He needs to see it from me. He can't just write it down. And so he saw that, and it was great, because I was in my element, because he could see the passion. He could see, you know, when we talked about assessment and evaluation, he was looking at me like, okay, you need to stop now. I get it. You know, I get it. I was like, really? You want me to stop? He's like, yeah, stop. Like, I get it. You get it. when you hear that from your boss, you're like, okay, okay, that's good. And if there was a point where he's like, no, no, give me more, I'm not getting it, then I'm like, oh, geez, okay, I guess that's not my next piece, right? So.
I like that. I like that. I like the flow. I like that you got me thinking a lot of things. I like that you had the openness, that I get the sense that your assessor was also admitting or sort of discussing kind of the limitations of the assessment tool. That you strike him as an individual, that the tool is meant to in some ways reveal deficit and some small ways, and that wasn't happening here. It opens up a whole different space of like, if someone ever says to you, that's, let's say, we'll say in a leadership position, if they say, you know, have you ever considered, and you already have a body of work that represents it, that's a really cool space to be in. Like, that's just a really cool space to be in. It's like someone saying, hey, you know what, have you checked out Twitter? Twitter's kind of cool for learning. And you're like, yeah, it is. And, you know, I would love to sort of like connect with you on it. Like, oh, you know about Twitter? Cool. It's nice to be sort of like a part of that. It's just a good feeling to know that that your investment in yourself so far has street cred. So kudos to you on that.
He did say at the beginning of this, when he brought us together, everybody on TPA and NTIP, he did say his perspective of this is a celebration of who we are as educators. And so in his perspective, from his point of view, the TPA process is a celebration. It's like, let's look at the amazing educator you are and what you bring to the table. That doesn't mean that there aren't next steps for people. There are, for all of us. But his focus was not on deficit, not at all. His focus was on what do you bring to the table and how do you make it work. And so, I mean, knowing that about him eased a lot of anxiety. In my last TPA with my last administrator, it did not go like this. It did not go like this. It was, I was part of what it was. It was very formal. And I did a lot of things to prepare, and I collected a lot of evidence to demonstrate that I was doing my job. So it was a very different experience. And I know that, like, for me, I know that I can, when I need to be very formal, I can be. And when I need to back off on that, I can do that too. But it was not the same experience. And my wife's experience was slightly different than my experience, because she had her observation the day after me. And so we were in the same week. We were doing around the same type of lesson. It was really interesting. But her experience was different than mine. Two different administrators, the same process, but kind of happened differently. It looked a little bit different. And she was successful as well. And I never had any doubt that she, you know, that the outcome would be different. But now we're both done, and that stress can go away. And then we can open up to new stress, right? Ooh. Whatever comes our way. And on that note, I have to punch out, or else I will be more stressed because I won't be able to get my kid to where he's supposed to be.
No problem. Want to see a scribble?
I do. I would love to. Oh, it's the decoded rain. I like it. What's the red and the blue? I don't get that. Oh, the pills. It's a Matrix-themed podcast this week. The pills. Interesting. I need to revisit those movies.
I started to watch. Yeah, they're on a major streaming platform.
Nice, nice.
No,
yeah, I get it.
Avoiding this. Can I leave you with something?
Uh-oh, is it homework?
No, it's just a thing about. And it might, so I went to Quest last week. I didn't mention, I don't even remember how much I talked about Quest. So Quest being a very large conference in pursuit of student success, varied sort of themes of student success, This previous one was sort of looking at indigenous education. So everything, there's just so much there. Okay, so looking at anti-oppressive networks, looking at frameworks, even in looking at anti-Black racism was included in there as well. So it was a whole lot. So the next theme that they're working on with Quest for next year, the title is Ethical Leadership. And it's just to think about, I was having a discussion just this morning before we came on the podcast with my wife, with Karen, and she's a vice principal. And we were talking about what those discussions already look like. And it's one of my little bits of thought fuel that kind of bug me about conferences is the kind of like the leapfrogging that can happen. So you get a really great topic, some great learning that happens at a conference, but it's like Vegas, sort of like what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. And how does the stuff that you develop at a conference effectively get networked into your day to day? So the relationships with your colleagues at school, all this sort of thing. So just so that you're not like, ooh, I can't wait till next year to work on this thing again. So my question to you, and you know, at moving forward, is sort of in consideration of the leadership framework and some of the other literature that is right now very naturally kind of woven into becoming an administrator or becoming a leader within school boards. Where in there do we see concrete tools and strategies for developing our ethical side? One of the edges that has popped up in this is that, well, our understanding of ethical learning is embedded in what we do. And I thought, no, I think we maybe need to consider something a little bit more concrete and structured. How do we teach ethical leadership? And that's just something to think about. It's the thing that's in my brain now. And it's very much, it's more couched in the whole idea of, okay, now there's a whole other year to the next Quest. What does the story, what are the chapters of Quest for our, or this learning of ethical leadership, what are the chapters that are being written right now? So that when and if I decide to go to Quest next year, if I can get to that list, how will I have some tread on the road so that Quest just becomes a part of this understanding, and it's not the one landing spot for this understanding. So that's my, sorry, that's what I was thinking. Oh, are you muted? Oh, I don't have your audio.
Oh, that was weird. My mic was muted, but not the system. Anyway, I love it. I would love to talk more about ethical leadership next week because I feel like something's going on. Something's going on at my school, and I feel like my leadership team is leaning on that ethical side. But anyway, we'll talk
more. How do you teach it?
My hands are up. I'm not touching a thing. See you all later.